The Quilt Fiction Podcast presents Friendship Album, 1933, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dowell, read by the author. Episode 1.
Chapter 1. Eula Baker scurried down East Main at a fast clip, doing her best to keep her eyes straight ahead. She reminded herself that she didn't have time to shop, especially for things she didn't need and couldn't afford. Besides, if she didn't set her sights on getting to where she was going, she might lose her nerve, turn around, and head for home. It was the thought of home, so quiet and empty, Dan at work, her boys gone, that pressed Eula forward, and in a few minutes the Milton Falls Carnegie Free Library loomed before her like a Greek temple. Eula patted her handbag as if to assure herself it was still there. Her task wouldn't take but a minute, and the sooner she got it done, the sooner she could stop worrying about it. She trotted up the steps as though someone might stop her if she moved too slowly. Who was she, this plain, aging farm wife, frumpy in her old cloth coat and sensible brown Oxfords, to be ascending the stairs to the library's grand entrance? Well, it was a public building, wasn't it? And as the library was the only place Eula could think to put up her notice, she bravely pushed her way through the heavy front doors, took a deep breath, and approached the head librarian's horseshoe-shaped oak desk. The woman sitting behind it, a Mrs. Meineke, according to the name badge pinned neatly to her blouse, was making notes in a ledger and took no notice of Eula for several moments. Eula patted her handbag again. Still there. At last the librarian looked up. "Yes, then. How can I help you?" Eula stood with her mouth slightly open, unable to think of what to say. Blushing furiously, she put her handbook on the counter and unclasped it, pulling out the card she'd so carefully worded. She handed it to Mrs. Meineke. The librarian took the card and read it quickly. "Is this for the community notice board?" she asked, tapping the card against her hand as though she were trying to shake more information out of it. When Eula nodded, Mrs. Meineke said, "You failed to put anything on the card as to whom to contact and how." That would be me, Eula said. Who to contact, that is. Whom to contact. They should contact Mrs. Eula Baker. And do you have a telephone? Well, no. Do folks around here have telephones? No, mostly not, Mrs. Meineke admitted. A post office box, then. Just a street address, I'm afraid, Eula said. 34 Hale Avenue. They could send a letter to my house or even come by. I'll put down your street address, the librarian said, and Eula felt a small surge of hope. Maybe Mrs. Meineke didn't think her idea foolish then. Of course I'd be surprised if anyone replies, Mrs. Meineke went on. Everyone I know is already in a circle. Mine meets Thursday nights at First Presbyterian. At least 20 ladies show up every week. Well, surely there must be a few, Eula began, but Mrs. Meineke interrupted her. No, I highly doubt it. You see, ever since Mrs. Grangerfield began her column in the paper 2 years ago, have you read it, Quilt Along with Emmeline, in the Gazette? Everyone's just gone mad for making quilts. In fact, if you're so interested, I'm surprised you're not in a bee already. We just moved to town in the fall, Eula said. I guess I came too late. Mrs. Meineke's expression softened. Perhaps there are other newcomers who would be interested. Not that we have many newcomers here. Milton Falls is such an old sort of place. May I ask where you come from?
Just a few miles out. We had a farm, but we had to give it up.
Ah, yes, the Depression, Mrs. Meineke said, sounding as though she understood everything about having to sell your farm for pennies on the dollar, as though she had a husband who loved farming as much as he loved breathing, but had to quit his farm for a job as a school custodian, leaving her at home with nothing to do but a few garden chores, the radio all she had for company, her boys on one side of the country or the other, scrambling for work. As though Mrs. Meineke knew anything about that. Eula took a deep breath and puffed out her chest. We like living in town, and I'm sure there's at least one or two ladies who need someone to sew with. I thank you for putting up my card.
Just don't get your hopes up too high, Mrs. Meineke told her. I'm afraid you're a little late to the dance, dear.
A light snow had begun to fall when Eula made her way outside. She was careful going down the steps. She checked for her handbag one more time.
If she remembered correctly, she had a dime, two nickels, and a dozen or so pennies in her change purse. Melsner's candy store was on her way home. "Come along, Eula Jean," she could just hear Mother calling, as she always had on their rare trips into town when Eula was a child. "I believe you could use a treat." Eula walked a little faster, anticipating the sweet taste of candy on her tongue. A chocolate drop or two would take away the sting of knowing the only response her card was likely to get was laughter. The notion that anyone would want to quilt with the likes of Eula Baker being just too rich for words. Chapter 2. Do you like to make quilts? Do you like to quilt in the company of other ladies? I would like to start a quilting bee in my home. Please let me know if you're interested. I have been making quilts for all my life and have many patterns to share. First meeting, Wednesday, January 25th, 9 o'clock in the morning. Contact Mrs. Eula Baker, 34 Hale Avenue. Bess Wilcox thought about writing down the address and then decided against it. She wasn't ready yet for anything as social as a quilting bee, especially one made up of strangers. Really, she wasn't much in the mood for people at all, besides her girls, of course, and Mrs. Johnson, her housekeeper, who read Bess's moods better than anyone and could tell whether Bess longed for company or for quiet. She glanced at the book in her hand, Sons, by Pearl S. Buck. Mrs. Johnson had recommended it. They both had loved The Good Earth, and then practically pushed Bess out the door this morning in the direction of the library. "By the look of the sky, there'll be snow again by tonight, and a lot of it," she'd said. "Get yourself a book, and you can read by candlelight if the electric goes out." The line at the checkout desk was 5 people long, and Bess wondered if she should abandon her book and go home. She had the complete works of Louisa May Alcott on her shelves, and she never tired of rereading Little Women and Joe's Boys. If the snowstorm was bad enough to keep the girls from school, they could have a cozy time of it, gathered around the fireplace, reading and popping popcorn. "Why, Bess Wilcox, I haven't seen you in an age." Bess didn't have to turn around to know that Milton Falls' most active churchwoman, Mary Pressler, was advancing upon her from across the room. She sighed, then arranged her face. Surely Mary was planning to ask Bess to come to a tea to discuss some worthy cause, or perhaps to join a committee. But first she'd want to commiserate over Bess's lot in life, to cry a little, offer consolation. Bess was awfully tired of being consoled every time she went downtown. "Mary," Bess tried to sound delighted, "you're looking well." "You, my dear, are looking a bit pale, I am sorry to report." Mary was now at Bess's side and had laid a hand on her shoulder. "Grief drains one, doesn't it, even after so many months?" Bess kept her smile pasted on. "How are the girls? Is Flora struggling as much with geometry as Helen is? I'm afraid she'll tear out every last strand of her hair before the school year's over." Mary waved Bess's question away. "Oh, she's fine. She has a head for numbers, although where she got it is a mystery. Robert's as helpless as I am when it comes to mathematics. But listen, dear, I'm so glad to have run into you because I desperately need your help." What would it be this time, Bess wondered? A commitment to serve punch at the church bazaar? A tray of cookies for coffee hour? She wouldn't mind either, she supposed, but please, oh please, don't let it be. "Would you consider serving on the altar guild?" Mary brought her hands together as though making a prayerful request. "You'd be perfect for it, and my dear, we are absolutely desperate. Between you and me, we've had to ask Sarah McLeese to step down. She just couldn't seem to keep from smudging the chalices." "Oh, I don't know, Mary," Bess said, stalling. "This is such a bad time. You've heard about Annie, I suppose. She's on bed rest until the baby comes, and I need to be able to leave on a moment's notice to go help. Her husband George is a dear, but sometimes a girl needs her mother." "Yes, but Columbus isn't that far, is it? If you need to take the week off, I'll happily step in and take your place. So there, say that you'll do it. The guild meets Wednesday mornings and Saturday afternoons. You have those free, don't you?" Bess glanced around the room as though a convenient excuse might be written on a wall or along the spine of a book. It wasn't that she minded so much the idea of serving on a committee. In fact, she could hear Mrs. Johnson urging her to do just that, to get out of the house, see her friends, and she supposed her housekeeper had a point. Sooner or later, Bess would need to put her toe back in. But the Altar Guild? The six women on St. Luke's Altar Guild were always of a particular sort. They were quiet, pious women who liked to serve behind the scenes. Most of them were white-haired, some were frail. All of them were widows. Turning to Mary, Bess said, "Did you say Wednesday mornings?" Mary nodded, "Starting at 9, going to noon. Usually Mrs. Basil serves a luncheon, nothing fancy, but always lovely." Bess did her best to look sad. "Oh, dear, you see, I already have a Wednesday morning commitment. My quilting bee meets on Wednesdays, and I have to tell you, it saved my life these past few months. I really couldn't drop it." Mary's lip twitched, her expression vacillating between sympathetic and annoyed. "Oh, I certainly understand. Which bee do you attend? The one at Eula Baker's on Hale Avenue?" "All the way over there?" Mary exclaimed. "Why, that's practically out in the country." "It's not that far from my house," Bess said, fairly certain this was true. "A 10-minute walk at most." She stopped herself from going on about what a dear Eula was, feeling she ought to limit her lies to a manageable number. "Well, I'm glad for you that you found something to occupy your time," Mary said, not sounding glad at all. "We'll just have to find something else for you to do at St. Luke's now that you're back in the swing of things. Perhaps I could bake a cake for the Spring Bazaar." "Yes, yes, that sounds... Oh, look, there's Ethel Mitchell. Must run." Bess watched as Mary accosted the mayor's wife, who was sitting at one of the long reading tables, leafing through a magazine. "Thank you, Eula Baker, whoever you are," Bess thought. She stepped up to the checkout desk, the line having dissipated, and handed over her novel to the assistant librarian. As she waited for the young woman to stamp the date on the back page, Bess dug through her purse for a pencil and a piece of paper. She supposed she should consider going to at least one meeting, just in case Mary started asking around. Taking the book from the library and tucking it into her purse, Bess walked over to the notice board and wrote down the address. She briefly thought about how lovely it would be to pick up a needle again, perhaps make a quilt for the baby due in March. But no, she was done with all that. There was a line intersecting Bess's life, clearly marking it into neat segments of before and after. Quilting was from before. Bess didn't live there anymore. Chapter 3. Florence supposed it was a good thing that the board meeting took place on the third floor of the library, with its marvelous views of Claremont Avenue in East Main. Otherwise, she'd have gone mad from boredom halfway into the proceedings, the board's chair, Mr. Sawhill, still reading the minutes from last month's meeting. From her current vantage point, she could see the mercantile, the stately building that housed her family's insurance business. Florence imagined her brother Thomas behind his massive black desk, smoking a cigar as he dictated letters to his secretary, Patty Ann. Was he as bored as Florence, or was the prospect of making more money enough to keep him enthusiastic through the afternoon's last pale hours? What about Harry, on the mercantile's second floor, his desk smaller than Thomas's, but more ornate, covered with actuarial tables and racing forms? As the second eldest brother, he made as much money as Thomas, but wielded less power. Did he have schemes of taking the throne by force, like George, Duke of Clarence, plotting to overthrow Edward IV? Did he long to occupy Thomas's seat behind the desk that had once belonged to their father? Knowing Harry, what he most likely longed for was a beer and a game of billiards before returning to his palatial home on Walnut Street, where his wife Mabel would feed him rare beefsteak along with gossip about Milton Falls Country Club set, such as it was. Big fish, small pond, Florence thought, stifling a yawn as the discussion turned to next year's budget. It was a pond she swam in herself, but reluctantly. As an unmarried woman, but surely not a spinster yet, at the age of 27, she was dependent on her brothers, who managed her inheritance and decided on her annual allowance, which they'd been stricter about since the crash, even though Grangerfield & Sons Insurance Company had taken only the mildest of blows. Sometimes Florence thought of herself as a heroine from an Austen novel, an Eleanor Dashwood, or a Miss Elizabeth Bennet, her fortunes dictated by the whims of her family. "Miss Grangerfield, your thoughts on the matter?" Florence's head jerked. Had she dozed off? She must have, seeing as she had no earthly idea what Mr. Sawhill was asking her about.
No thoughts at this time, Florence said, coughing to cover her embarrassment.
She cringed, knowing that if word got back to Thomas that she was sleeping through her board meetings, she'd get an earful. Florence's job, as her brother often reminded her, was to represent the family's various charitable and civic concerns. It was not to nap during budget discussions.
"Do you have a cold, Miss Grangerfield?"
Mrs. Lacey, a kind, elderly woman wrapped in furs, waved a handkerchief in Florence's direction.
"Do you need a hanky? Would you like to be excused to get a glass of water?"
"Water, yes," Florence replied gratefully. "Water would be just the thing." Taking her leave, Florence went out into the hallway, where she paused before a row of portraits, a collection of library board chairmen through the years, and bore their looks of stern judgment as long as she could, before fleeing down the stairwell to the first floor, where the faces before her were so much friendlier, if not actually the faces of her friends. Florence's friends were not readers by and large. Like Florence, they were committee members and clubwomen, their days crowded with meetings and luncheons and teas. Florence herself was a great reader and often traveled from meeting to meeting with a book or magazine stowed away in her purse. She wondered now what new magazines had come in since last quarter's board meeting, the one she'd escaped by feigning a dizzy spell. She preferred the needlework magazines, of course, the subscriptions to which she championed every year. Florence never once slept through a periodicals meeting. The women of Milton Falls, Ohio, deserve their copies of Hearth and Home and Ladies' Home Journal, and who can afford her own subscription these days? Well, Florence could, of course, although Thomas scolded her when he saw the piles of needlecraft and the needlewoman stacked on her coffee table. "Why would you need these when your sister-in-law is Emmeline Grangerfield?" he always demanded. "She can supply you with all the advice and patterns you could possibly ever need." That reminded Florence. She hadn't read Emmeline's column this morning, the paper having arrived late after last night's snow. She found the Milton Falls Gazette hanging neatly from a rod in the periodicals section and carefully dislodged it. As always, Emmeline's column ran on page 4, the so-called ladies' page, and was crowded about with recipes and tips for stain removal and a riveting description of last week's Lady Aid and Missionary Society meeting. Florence read through every article, saving Emmeline's for last. What would the news be this week from her sister-in-law's famous sewing circle? What silly mistake would Millie Poshtone have made that caused her seams to pucker? What patterns from far-off places, California, Canada, would Alicia Startmore bring to the table? Emmeline herself would certainly have a new quilting design or a block to offer, and with any luck, a recipe for a lovely cake. Not that Emmeline actually baked cakes. The recipes were always from her housekeeper, Cora, known in the column as, "Dear Cora, my ever-able cook." What Florence was most eager to read was news of her own contribution to this lively, if entirely imaginary, circle. She never knew if this week the fictional Florence's role was that of cheerleader. Sister-in-law Florence, always enthusiastic for a new quilting design, could not restrain her praise for my diamonds and stars pattern. Or student. Florence, so adamant about every stitch being correct, asked me to explain the construction of the block a second time. I think it's always smart to ask again if one doesn't understand, don't you? Emmeline had never asked Florence's permission to use her as a character in her weekly column. She'd simply assumed that Florence would be pleased, and Florence often was. In this week's column, her fictional self described several new pattern books she'd recently perused, and Florence found nothing in Emmeline's portrayal of her to contradict. In fact, she thought she sounded rather smart. Moreover, Emmeline had described her as wearing a lovely pink frock, and Florence liked the idea that anyone reading the column would think her fashionably dressed. This week's entry ended with a recipe for lemon cake, and reading it over, Florence was tempted to attempt the cake for herself, though she wasn't much of a cook. That was the wonder of Quilt Along with Emmeline. It always left Florence inspired, even though she knew every word of the column was a fiction. Well, not the patterns or the quilting designs, but Millie and Alice and the others were make-believe, as were their meetings, the round table where they gathered, and the sunlit room they gathered in. No such table or room existed in Emmeline's dark Victorian home. She'd made it all up from whole cloth, so to speak. It puzzled Florence that everyone seemed to take for granted the veracity of Emmeline's tales.
Did no one find it troubling that Alicia and Millie only appeared on the pages of the Melton Falls Gazette, but never at the grocer's or the church social? She longed to tell someone that it was all a farce, an entertaining and educational farce, but a farce nonetheless. But Emmeline had sworn her to secrecy. Florence sighed as she carefully refolded the paper. The funny thing was, she would very much like to be a part of a sewing circle. A real circle, that is, made up of flesh and blood quilters. She sewed with Emmeline from time to time, but her sister-in-law always seemed to be rehearsing for a column. Worse, if she asked Emmeline for advice or a bit of help, Florence knew that her questions would appear in the following week's paper. It made her self-conscious and prone to making more mistakes than she normally would. She feared she was developing a reputation as someone who didn't know which end of the needle to thread. Not that any of it mattered, as no one had ever invited her to join their weekly bee, even though Emmeline's column had created such a rage for quilting in Milton Falls that sewing circles were as common as bridge clubs these days. But why would anyone invite Florence to join one when she was already a member of the best bee in town? No, she was trapped in Emmeline's made-up world and couldn't think of how to extract herself. Hanging the paper back in its spot, Florence looked around her, hoping to chance upon another activity that would keep her from returning to her meeting. Perhaps a look at the notice board outside of the reference room? She'd been thinking about adding another cat to her brood, and she'd found her last kitten, Tibby, advertised on the library board, next to notices about lost dogs and furniture for sale. They'd had a rather heated debate about the suitability of a community notice board at last July's meeting, but in the end, Florence and Mrs. Lacey had won the day. Florence strolled over and scanned the newest notices, but found no kittens for sale, only a beagle in need of a new home. A woman named Darcy Steintrager advertised that she sold the freshest eggs in town and had a rooster she was willing to let go. Memorial Methodist Church was looking for an organ tuner, and Marcus Weems would rent you his truck or dig a hole in your yard for a very, very low price. As she so often did reading the board, Florence felt the pulse of everyday life thumping through the handwritten announcements and advertisements. She wished she could be a part of it all, instead of someone who sat slumped over from boredom at this meeting or that one, the bulk of her day dull and dreary. But she herself wasn't dull or dreary. How she longed to make the outside of her life correspond with the inside. She was about to turn and reluctantly head back to her meeting when her eye caught upon a small card tucked into the board's corner. "Do you like to make quilts?" the card's author asked, and Florence found herself nodding. "Yes, very much." So who was this Eula Baker who also liked making quilts? And where was Hale Avenue? Florence had never heard of it. She wondered if Eula Baker had ever heard of her. Did she read Emmeline's column? If Florence wrote Mrs. Baker a note saying she'd like to join her circle, would she reply, "Aren't you already in a circle?" and deny Florence admission? Well, why couldn't Florence be in two quilting circles, one real and one make-believe? After all, the make-believe circle took up absolutely none of her time, so Florence could certainly make room for a second real circle, now couldn't she? Forgetting entirely about her meeting, she found her coat in the cloakroom and bounded down the library steps. "Dear Mrs. Baker," she began composing in her head, "I have been looking for a quilting bee for ever so long."
Friendship Album 1933, a quilting novel by Frances O'Rourke Dowell. Copyright 2018 by the author. All rights reserved. A production of Milton Falls Media Incorporated. Learn more about the Quilt Fiction podcast online at quiltfiction.com.
Be sure it's true.